It's time again for the one show that takes a look at coaching from a different perspective. The coaching perspective with Master Certified Business Coach, Doug DeFeller. Hey, Doug.
Hey, Paul. Glad to be here.
You threw me off. You're in studio today. Here I am.
I am. Well, look, everybody, welcome to today's episode of The Coaching Perspective. And our topic for today is, should the coach bring their body to the coaching conversation? And we're going to have a guest coach, Beth Rapps of Raising Clarity. But before we get to Beth, I'm your host, Doug DeFeller. I've been a Master Certified Coach by the International Coach Federation since 1999. And I've been coaching business owners, senior executives, and their teams for 20 years here in Southern California, all under the banner of The Coaching Perspective. If you'd like to know more about our coaching service, just go to the website, thecoachingperspective.com, or you can reach me the old-fashioned way, 714-726-8354. Look, before we bring Beth on the air, let me give you some background on her. Best Practice Raising Clarity is her company name, and her tagline, I love her tagline, it's to cultivate abundance in noble causes, people, and organizations. As she puts it, her brand is inner development coupled with entrepreneurial outer development in the form of work that benefits others. And she'll tell you right away that she's a very spiritual person with a multifaceted practice and no single religious allegiance, who coaches atheists, Hindus, rectivist Jews, she'll have to tell me how to pronounce that, renegade observant Catholics, self-isolated Buddhists, anyhow, anybody. Well, let me sort of share with you, my first exposure to Beth was a blog post of hers that, if you can believe it, was titled, Beth Doesn't Live Here Anymore, kind of grabbed my attention. In the blog, she explained that she had experienced a building fire about a month before, and she summarized it this way. She says, I woke up early that morning, observed there was no way to get out of my third floor apartment but the front windows, called the fire department who was around the corner. They arrived, broke open, and brought me out the windows, and when I returned a few hours later, I found there was no more there. The fire has taught me much. And then she goes on, here are the messages that I discerned from them thus far. And then she goes on to describe what she learned and probably some of the most positive lessons that I have ever had the opportunity to read. I knew I had to have her as a guest on the show and get to learn more about this insightful, generous, open person. So, Beth, welcome to the Coaching Perspective Radio Show.
Thank you. That is so touching. That's so moving to me. Thank you very much.
Oh, I am so excited to have you on the air today. Unfortunately, your voice is as soft as your personality, so I'm going to probably push you a couple times to speak up here. We're on radio.
Okay, I will do that. I have had a radio show. It was a poetry show.
The poetry?
But nonetheless, I appreciate being pushed.
Okay, well, and that was perfect. You came right back on. You must have stepped up to the mic. Well, look, let's just jump right into this. I could go on talking about you forever. I feel like I know you, and you and I don't really know each other. But start off by...
It was a great connection. It was very fun talking with you about this show.
Oh, mm-hmm. I've been looking forward to this. Let's share with the audience. Tell them a little bit about your business, what attracted you to coaching, and, you know, what it is that you do.
Okay. I started out as a grassroots organizer who had to raise money, and then I became a person who raised money as a profession, and then I became a person who got very curious about why I could raise immense amounts of money but didn't have a whole lot of it flowing through my personal life, and got into money coaching, and then sort of creating my own practice instead of just labeling myself a fundraiser and kind of moving around from nonprofit to nonprofit, brought me in touch with a former guest on your show. And got me, I think, into seeing myself as a coach, because in money coaching, you're a coach. I hadn't ever quite thought of myself as a coach. I thought of myself as a trainer, as a consultant. And during those years of being, quote, just a fundraiser, which is a very noble profession, I noticed that I really liked it when people took my advice. And I really, including as a staff person, there were times that I felt like, you know, poop, this is not right. Something I'm being asked to do isn't right. I'm going to need to leave this organization, which happens around money. And I thought, I am going to have people pay me for my wisdom. And I think it was the sense of wanting to be paid for what I know and finding the clients who can benefit the most from what I know that made me want to be a coach. Sounds so arrogant, but it's true.
It does not sound arrogant. And, you know, the money part of the coaching business is, from the coaches that I've talked to, and I do talk to a lot of them, it is the one area that they struggle with the most. It's like, oh, I'm born to be a coach. I love this. It's my passion. It's wonderful. But when it comes to talking to people about paying me for my coaching, they just fall all apart and have the sort of the worst impression of themselves that you could imagine. So what a noble area to be coaching in.
Thank you. Yeah, just this morning I had to have a conversation with a friend who was kind of casually asking me to brainstorm with her. And I said, you know, I struggled with it a lot of the night, I will say. I mean, it's still not easy. And I woke up and I said, you know, the real deal is, if you want me to brainstorm with you, you're going to need to pay me. And this is a friend I've known for probably 20 years. So, but it really, I had to just do what we're going to talk about on the show today, which is tune into the signals from my body that said, wow, there's a boundary violation going on here. This doesn't feel right. I could just swallow what's going on in my gut and notice the body language there that we use all the time. And I'm not even doing that on purpose. I'm just observing myself using that language. And I thought, no, I don't need to swallow this. This person is a good friend of mine. She's going to be able to hear me if I say no. You know, we can have a wonderful casual conversation, but I'm not going to brainstorm with you unless you pay me. It was really hard, but it was really fine. It went great. And the more detached from that I was, the easier that conversation was, I found today.
Isn't that amazing? Well, look, let's just jump right into it. I could go on with more details about your practice, and I'm sure we'll get to those as the show progresses. But, you know, integrating your body into the coaching conversation, what are we talking about here today?
Right. Well, first of all, we're talking about what I would consider a tool, a useful instrument that we carry around with us all the time. Depending on where we work, if we're in human resources, we're sort of in an office all the time. I work from home. I don't know, a lot of coaches I know work from home. But it's portable, and it's your body, and there it is. It's in more or less good shape, depending on, you know, what you've done with your body. But in any case, it is a constant source of information if you're paying attention to it. And you start to think of it as an instrument, and you realize that you're much more than your body, but your body is a useful instrument. That's maybe a weird way to talk about it, but I think it's a good opening.
And so it's an instrument, which means that it's a tool that's available to me. I like the fact that you've identified it's portable. It's always with me. I seldom leave home without it. So the question is, how do I use it in the coaching conversation? What are some of the things that you want us to think about here?
Okay. And the first thing is to not get overwhelmed by the fact of suddenly tuning into your own body while you're coaching. And I know therapists do this. For example, they, not that they get overwhelmed, but there's this observe, and there's a kind of therapy where the therapist is observing their own reactions to the client, negative, positive, and much more specific than that. When I say to people to start tuning in, what immediately happens is we don't know what to tune into. There's such a wealth of information, you know, including what I had for lunch is moving around, and if I've been drinking too much coffee and I feel dehydrated, you know, there's a lot of various noise that might be useful information if you're trying to figure out your health, but it's not useful necessarily toward your client. So I guess I would say we could pay attention to three main areas. And I get much more finely grained than this, but I think as starting out, that would be your gut and your chest, your heart, and your head. Just those three. And starting to observe as someone is telling you their story, as someone is telling you their issue, and you're the coach, you have a minute to sort of tune in to those three areas while they're talking. You can do it quietly while they're sitting in front of you. You can certainly do it on the phone. And just start noticing what's going on in those areas. And I want to not talk too long and I want to make sure to let you ask me more questions about it so that I'm on track.
No, no, keep going. I'm hearing what you're saying. I couldn't say I know how to do it yet, but all right. I'm listening.
All right. All right. So really, basically, we can start with the belly.
Okay.
Does my belly feel loose or does it feel tense? And we talk a lot about gut instinct, and there are really good reasons that we talk like that. There's a lot of stuff, you know, it's being understood more and more that all of our intelligence is not located in the brain. There's a lot of intelligence in the heart, actually, very interestingly, and I feel like our gut is also, and I've seen science on this, you know, I'm not certainly not interested in debating the science, but that there's actual intelligence that emanates from the body, and it's specifically from the gut. Very strange and interesting idea to those of us who grew up thinking that it's all going on in the brain. You know, I think, therefore I am, is what we have grown up with in our culture. But so just kind of even, you can put your hand on your belly if you feel out of touch with it. It's like, well, what's going on there? And we're used to measuring the size of it. It's like, no, it's not about how big my belly is or how flat my belly is. How does it feel? In relationship to the stuff I'm hearing from this client, is what they're telling me, that I feel nauseated by it? We don't have to tell the client how we're feeling, but how we need to notice ourselves. Do I feel, is it a yes feeling? Like, oh, this is great, I feel loose and relaxed and soft. Soft belly is something that meditators get used to hearing about. Or is it tense? And if it's tense, is it nausea tense? Is it like gripping tense? So does that help, Doug?
Is this an ability that you have found you sort of build over time? Because as I'm listening to you, I can go, okay, I can relate to that. But it's sort of like if we're talking about the belly, I'm going to go, I have an on and an off sense. I feel it tightening up. It gets, you know, if something's uncomfortable, if something's conflicting, I may feel it in the belly. If it isn't conflicting, if everything's okay, then I feel nothing. So it's either on or off. There's no other gradients for me. Now, is that...
Very nice. Very nice. That works fine. So on or off is a yes or a no. That works.
Okay.
If it's a yes, there's no feeling. You're kind of noticing that it just feels normal. And if it's an... Well, that may be the off. I don't know how you're describing it.
Yeah, that's how I'm describing the off.
Okay. And then if there's a reaction, it's going to be a tightening. That's when you're going to be noticing it. And I feel like a lot of our integrity sits in the belly. And if there's a no feeling in the belly going on, it's not, and we're even a little bit connected to our client, it's not a no about us. It's a no about what they're telling you, that it's not right for them, that it's not ethical, that it's not consistent, that it won't make them happy. You don't have a lot more information than the no. But it's information nonetheless, and it isn't information, importantly, that you would necessarily get from your rational mind. A lot of times, for example, working with money, and Paul told me to tell stories, working with money is really easy to slip down a slippery slope. We have a very money-driven culture. We have a, quote, success-driven culture, and that culture is driven by money, and it's all about how much. It's not always about how you make it, but how much you can make. And there's a great patting on the back of people making money without a lot of concern sometimes about how the money gets made.
Yes.
And for me, that's a huge red flag, obviously. So there's an example. If your client is telling you something and you know it is creepier than crap, it really is a good thing to find, to acknowledge, this does not feel good to me. And as an ethical person, as a good coach, it's also not consistent with who they are. Doesn't mean you say those things. They don't need to come out of your mouth. They just need to get acknowledged by your rational mind. And then you might even say to your client, okay, I'm noticing something, and I just need a second here to sit with myself and tell you how to tell you what I'm feeling, or find a way to express to you the concern that's coming up for me. That might be a language that I would use.
You know, a couple of things sort of hit me as I'm listening to you talk about this. We talk a lot in coaching about mirroring back to the client, you know, making sure that they see how they are coming across to others, because we don't always see how we're coming across to others. So one of our coaching techniques is to mirror back what the client is saying or the feelings that he's generating. And what you're talking about here is if I'm getting this tense feeling, this uncomfortable feeling in my belly, then to let the client know that, are you aware that you could be generating this kind of reaction in people with the behavior or the conversation that we're having, might be very valuable to them. Is that what we're talking about here?
That's useful. I think of that as even one degree removed
okay.
from what I'm saying. And what's a little weird about what I'm saying is that I think we're having a feeling that the client is actually having and repressing. And it sounds weird that we could be that identified with the other person, but it's documented over and over and over. If we are remotely close to anybody, we tend to pick up and feel what they're feeling. So I would even say we're feeling what they're feeling, but they're not able to articulate it. They may have shoved it down, almost literally, like into the belly. We're just being with the belly now for a moment. They may have repressed it. So, you know, their father might be a voice in their heads, because I do a lot of money coaching, and the father and the mother are very important. They might hear their father saying, attaboy, you go for it, and they're feeling nauseated. But what's going to happen is we feel the nausea. We don't have to be, like, super psychic intuitive for this to happen. And I think as women, empathy comes naturally, so-called naturally, because we are societally, you know, sort of trained to be empathetic. But men are absolutely as empathetic as women. So I would even take it one notch closer to the client. But yes, absolutely, the mirroring thing, I think, is also very likely.
Okay, so let me, if I can... The other thought that came to my mind was, is this recognition of the physical feeling in the belly a way to sort of, it's an alarm to use your intuition? In other words, intuition, many times we think of it as in the brain, that what is intuition? I'm listening to the client, I'm listening to the words, but all of a sudden I've got this intuitive feeling that something's going wrong, that something needs to be said or whatever. How do you correlate that intuition with the physical observations that you're talking about here, Beth?
Well, it goes back to the sort of on-off, and does it get more as you go along? To me, those things are indissociable. I guess intuition for me is such a big category. I get information that's non-rational from many sources. And one reason that I am such a spiritual person is that I get reliable information from spirit. But we're not going to really go there in this conversation. But I am talking about a reliable source of information from the gut that's not rational. And I guess that would be called intuition. I mean, to me, intuition is really big, because the other centers that we're going to talk about also provide what I would also call intuition, your heart and your head, but not necessarily your rational mind. Yes, definitely your intuition.
Okay.
And when we talk about trusting intuition, it's a lot like a muscle. And what I coach people in doing when they want to learn how to trust their own intuition, and now I'm saying this to the other folks listening to this show, is to just try it in little increments and think carefully before you speak. You know, there's no need to blurt it out. Intuition is not always right with a capital R, but to filter it and sit with it for a sec before saying it, and then watch the impact that it has on the client. And that creates a feedback loop that then strengthens our knowing of when to use it and when it's more accurate.
Great advice. Great advice. I like that very much. Well, look, let's continue this space odyssey journey through the body. And
okay.
What's the next part we're exploring here?
So I would call it the heart,
okay,
which is really central to faith traditions. It's central in psychology. It's central in the physical body. Again, I would argue that there's a kind of intelligence there. Some of the emotions, we've talked about sort of some of the issues, the ethical issues, the nausea, the integrity that come in that belly area. These issues are much more tender. And I often will put my hand on my heart or my fingers on my chest, my sternum, if I really want to direct my attention to what am I feeling as this person is talking? What am I feeling around what they're not saying? And as coaches, you know, we do tune into what people are not saying. They might have said it a week ago, a month ago, but they're not saying it now. that thing might show up as missing, which is really a great role for us as coaches. Because, like you were saying, it's hard sometimes to see yourself. So there I am, and, you know, they don't know why I'm putting my hand on my heart, or they can't see me if I'm on the phone. And I might get a sense of sadness. I might get a sense of tightness. Sometimes it's connected even up to my throat, where my throat gets tight. And maybe it's repressed tears, and especially in men, this is really an issue, because society is mean to men who want to cry. Although I think it's getting better. We're seeing more of that in Hollywood, in movies. You know, the manly man is still a guy who can cry, which is, I think, great. We'll talk about crying in a second. Basically, for me, I think crying is like farting. If you don't cry, you're just going to explode, and that's why you get sick. So we just need to cry and not glamorize it. It's much prettier than farting, but basically, like, we don't need to attach a lot of importance to it. We just need to do it.
Well, we've done another first here on the show. I've never heard the two addressed in the same sentence. This is great.
Yes. I've tried to de-glamorize crying because people make such a big deal out of it. So what am I feeling? I'm guessing, and my experience, again, using that feedback loop over and over, is that I am feeling the other person's uncried tears. I'm feeling their unexpressed emotion, or I'm feeling a kind of immediately below the surface sadness that they can't even identify the source of, but they know is there. They're too shy to talk about it, or it's like death. We don't want to talk about it, you know, and sometimes it can be even related to death. It can just be, I mean, what we call existential angst. You know, I'm not in the right job. Nobody in my world supports me, my art, you know, or supports me doing this, you know, other thing. So the heart is full of those kinds of tender, kind of painful. And as coaches, it's good to notice that is not coming from you. That's coming from the other person, quite likely. And you don't have to carry it around with you. You don't have to attach to it. People often talk about dumping, or they'll apologize to me for dumping something. And I'm like, you're offloading it, but you're not onloading it to me. I'm not taking it on. I'm observing it. I'm experiencing it and letting it go. It's really, really important if we're going to open up our hearts more and pay attention. We're not taking it on.
Okay, so
just noticing it.
So let me ask you a question here. The heart, the belly, I could relate to. The heart, I'm struggling with, in the sense the heart muscle itself. I'm going, I don't feel anything there. I mean, but yet when you talk about swelling in the throat or tears in the eyes, I mean, I can watch a movie that's very emotional and I can feel being choked up. I never thought of it as the heart. Is that the same thing that you're talking about?
Yes, that totally works. I feel like the energy moves from the heart, and it wants to come out the throat, and we want to cry, we want to express, and if we don't, that's where it shows up. There's a kind of like a clenching, and so we don't cry. We feel the stinging in the eyes and even in the head or in the throat. But if you notice, you don't have to necessarily think of it as a muscle, but your chest area, pecs, I want to say, your clavicle, you can even sort of, it's funny to talk about it, but you can sort of push in there, and there's a greater or a lesser sensitivity and softness. And, you know, you may be feeling really happy to be talking to me right now, but, you know, the next time you're coaching, you might start to just feel, are the muscles tight, or are they, again, like the belly, loose and soft?
I wish I could see our audience, because I'm watching the producer as you're talking here. He's poking all around and experimenting as you're going through, and nodding his head or going, you know, getting a quizzical look on his face. So
it's right under the clavicle that I'm talking about. That's actually an energy medicine point. It's an emotional release point. They're like these two divots right under your clavicle. And you won't hurt yourself by sort of pressing into them, and at different times they feel painful or they feel perfectly fine. There's a lot there. But it's just another possibility. It's like another information stream. And it's a pretty tender human place. And ideally, we love our clients. I generally love the people that I work with. I mean, I love you and Paul. It sounds crazy, but like when we... And I was writing about that, about how love is really impersonal. When you really radiate love, you just love. Like, you don't love someone for this or that. You really just love. There's a sense of, I really love my clients. And so even if I get sort of a dead feeling in my heart, that's actually huge for me. That's very unusual. And I would generally say, oh, that's not about me. I used to think I was this maybe terrible person or had all these things. No, I'm feeling what the other person's feeling, and I want to try to help them give voice to that. But again, I'm going to use a filter. I'm not just going to blurt out, oh, you know, God, how can you stand walking around like that? No, I'm not going to do that. No more. You wouldn't do that. I would never do that. Nobody would do that.
But I like the fact that you've mentioned it twice, and I think it's a key point, is that once you tune into these things, you don't let them run rampant. There is a filter. You have to filter, and you have to decide, you know, what are you going to pass on and what are you going to rethink, which would be the prudent thing to do. I think the other point that you're making for me here is, and maybe this is just me, maybe it's a guy thing, but I can think of movies that I get emotional about, the heart, okay? But I probably would have a harder time thinking of how many coaching conversations that I let that feeling get in. My guess is I'm probably mentally siphoning it out. I'm filtering it out. I'm so busy being objective. I'm so busy collecting data. I'm so busy listening to words that I may not be taking in all of the emotions. And if that's the part of the point that you're driving here, that to use the body to open up the door to these emotions the same way you open up your ears to the words, boy, I'm all in.
Oh, thank you. Yes, I would never presume, you know, to me you're a very warm, open-hearted person. I would never have presumed what you said, but I think as disclosure about, you know, I think a very common thing, especially among men, yes, that's right. You probably are doing that. And I think one reason we do that is because we're paid to be smart. Like, we're paid to figure out stuff and suss things out before the other person, or we're not. I never feel like I'm worth my salt. Just like this brainstorming thing my friend wanted me to do. I mean, I finally realized, wait, that's what people pay me for. They pay me to do that stuff. Okay. And so part of that is I'm smart, and I'm in my rational mind. I'm a PhD. I happen to be a PhD. I'm a super intellectual person. I use big words all the time, you know. And so it's natural for me to do what you're talking about, kind of live in the mind. But I've just noticed that I am actually so much smarter and more useful if I'd integrate these other streams of knowing. And so at first it may feel like it slows us down. And there is that fear factor, I can understand. But truthfully, when we talk about like something like beginner's mind, we talk about bringing a fresh awareness. There's nothing like it. Nothing like what we're talking about, these fresh streams of information for freshening our thoughts, for allowing ourselves to think, wow, creatively or unusually about the client, which is, again, what they want.
I love the point, what you're pointing out, and the fact that you're giving permission here that as we experiment with this and start to use it, we need to recognize, and it's okay to recognize that we may slow down our coaching while we're developing and learning to use this tool. And that's fine. That's what I hear you saying.
It is, and I think it may be a relief to the client to actually also get some permission to slow down and themselves begin. You find that you integrate this questioning into your questions to the client. Well, how are you feeling? Well, what do you mean, how am I feeling? I don't know. I'm feeling like I want to go have lunch. Well, what about in your belly? What about in your heart? How's your head? You know, you look uncomfortable. Let's just go with that for a second, and that's encouraging the client to maybe just check in a little bit, and then they get a fresh perspective. They also get a little more spaciousness around something, and they relax. And then something you were talking about in an earlier show, that relationship builds and deepens with the client in an appropriate way, obviously not an inappropriate way. There's a kind of an intimacy, I think you used that word, and I thought that was pretty bold and a good choice.
Thank you.
It's a very appropriate intimacy where they will tell you stuff, and they need to tell you stuff that they wouldn't tell someone else.
Absolutely. That is the marker that your coaching is working for me. That is one of the markers I look for.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about the head.
Well, so when we've been talking about, you know, in your head and rational mind, for me, the mind is not confined to the brain. The mind and the brain are two different things, and we'll leave that for some other time. But when I'm talking about the head, I'm talking sometimes, like a really obvious example would be a sort of caffeine headache, a tightness, maybe at the top of the head, at the temples or at the back, sort of where the head meets the neck. Another place to notice tightness, and again, this is just an on-off. This is not super finely grained or anything, in the jaw, obviously. And we know about people with TMJ,
right.
You know, the jaw. If something wants to come out and get said, and the throat doesn't clench, the jaw is often the place where it does get bitten back. We talk about biting back our words, bite your tongue. And there's a feeling of that that can come up. And then also the eyes, like what you were talking about, feeling, you know, tears maybe in the eyes that want to come out. And I never force any, you know, I never push anybody to cry. I'll maybe say, wow, you sound sad, or that sounds really sad, or I feel sad for you. I remember years and years ago when I was a teenager, I cry for people, like I cry for them all the time. And a teacher told me that this other young woman was very moved by the fact that I was crying about something she had told us in class. You know, I took on her pain just kind of long enough to cry about it. And so I'm not very shy about saying, well, you know, I'm feeling so sad for you. It doesn't mean I'm wiping my sadness on you. It might mean, and sometimes the other person says, no, I'm not feeling sad, I'm feeling angry about that. I'm like, okay, cool. And sometimes the underneath the anger is some sadness, especially in men, and especially just in, you know, those of us who are kind of out there in the world very successful, anger is a lot more respected than sadness. Those are just some thoughts about it. But the whole kind of head area has different information to give us.
So
we can also watch, there's a place you can really watch if you're Skyping or face-to-face, you can really see someone's tension, where they're holding tension, and where they're holding back saying something that you might want to encourage them to say.
Okay, so we made a little bit of a shift here. We started out talking about the coach's body and being observant and reading those signs, and then you just moved into the client's body here. Obviously, there's not a limitation. I mean, the awareness in both cases is valuable.
Again, I notice that I'm feeling for them a lot of times, and I'll try it over and over and over, even if I can't see them. Like, it's going to sound weird, but I saw Paul doing the thing that you were describing a little while ago. While I was describing it, I saw him doing it. I wasn't surprised that you told me that. It's just interesting. Now, I don't think everybody starts out that aware, but you can be amazed. If you don't think of yourself as a completely separate body from the client, you will probably be amazed at what you know, and you can test this, that they're feeling. You really can. So there's not a huge difference between my body and the client's body when I'm in a session. It's like I'm trying on what they're feeling. There's some flow through. And again, I think as women, this is a little bit more normal, partly like when we're pregnant. It's a very strange feeling to have your body occupied by somebody else's body. I tell you, you know, the two of you.
I'll take your word for it.
It's pretty wild, right? It's crazy. And you begin to realize that, well, like we say, we're all one. And there is this incredible ability to know sometimes what the other person is feeling.
I want to make two points here. One is I want to clarify, and I don't think you're making this point. I want to make sure the audience is aware that you're not making it. You've referred to women being more naturally in tune to some of this, and I know you are not saying that men aren't capable of doing this. And so those coaches out there who are male, I mean, we have the same abilities. We've just been repressed through much of our training to not be cognizant of them.
Right. When I use the word natural, it has quotation marks around it. Every culture is really quite different in what it expects of men and women. And I don't believe for a second that women are naturally more probably anything. The thing about being pregnant and having another person's body in your body, okay, yes.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I don't believe anything is particularly natural. I think it's really in quotations. Other people want to tell me that it is. But the more permission I give, for example, to the men around me, the more I don't make them feel that their masculinity is at stake. They know that they're really secure with me as men, period, whatever they are, whatever they do, whoever they love, how they love, absolutely. There's much more freedom to be empathic. There's much more freedom to take on all the so-called feminine qualities, and likewise for women, not to be limited by our so-called feminine qualities and have all of the qualities as real people, as whole people. So yeah. I appreciate your saying that. You're right. Nobody can see me making the quotes with my fingers on radio.
I've seen your writing, too, and you have a unique way of personalizing your writing with quotes and parentheses, and I love it.
True.
Your feelings come right across, regardless of the grammar rules. You know, one of the examples that I can think of is that in the church that I go to, there was a minister that for a while made some people, not a lot of them, but made some people uncomfortable because every time he preached, he would cry. And the women weren't uncomfortable with this. They loved him even more because of it. But in talking to many of the men that I talked to, they were a little uncomfortable with it. At first, it made me a little uncomfortable until we, you know, started to realize that what we were experiencing was the depth of his emotion, the love he was feeling in the message that he was delivering, was coming through in a joyful sadness. It was a wonderful thing to see once we got by the cultural norm that what is a man standing in front of a room full of people doing crying in the middle of their presentation.
Well, for one thing, he's being a great example to other men.
Yeah.
I feel like men would have a lot less heart disease, would have a lot fewer heart attacks and things. But the joyful sadness, that's a really nice phrase. Joyful tears.
I don't want to sidetrack this.
Actually,
go ahead.
No, it's okay. I have to actually restrain myself sometimes and kind of be even detached from the desire to cry because it can be disturbing to other people, even for me as a woman. It can get in the way of the other person. Immediately, sometimes they start taking care of me, and I don't want them to do that. I want to take care of them. So there's an edge there that we have to be.
I can tell you take care of everybody. Let me ask you this question. It sort of popped in. It's sort of a little bit off on a tangent, but there's always this constant debate about what kind of coaching is more effective. Can I effectively coach somebody over the phone as well as if I could see them in person when I'm missing all of those tells of what their body is telling me, not their voice? How do you respond?
It sounds funny, but I work so much over the phone that when I'm face-to-face, I will sometimes close my eyes. Or if I'm doing a training with people, and especially if we're doing a meditation, you know, if I'm just telling somebody how to structure a budget, I don't go there. It's pretty much my rational mind. But I almost feel like the visual is too much extraneous information, and so much comes through in the voice. For me, I think I'm a very auditory person in that way. I would feel really limited if I could only coach face-to-face. First of all, I live in a town of 1,400 people. So I would have to move. And one of the beautiful things about my practice is that I bring the serenity of the area in which I live to other people all over the place. I coach, there's someone in Uganda that I coach. So I would feel really limited, and people get value, and they pay me to do it, so they're getting some value. But I don't really know what to say about that debate. It works for me, is all I can say, kind of.
Well, thank you. I'm always curious. I do both face-to-face and phone coaching, and because most of my clients are closer. I really think that in many ways I am a better coach on the phone I think there's a better coaching conversation on the phone because both parties are more focused on what's going on and less distracted by the face-to-face involvement, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I think it does. I feel like we're more heart-centered when we're on the phone, and we're more mammalian when we're face-to-face.
I don't know what mammalian means, but I know what heart-centered means, and I like that.
Yeah, you do know what, or you don't know it.
I don't know mammalian.
Oh, mammalian, yes, you do. Being a mammal.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And when we talk about the body, I mean, we are mammals. We sort of say, you know, human beings and animals. Well, we're animals. And there's a way you can sometimes, you know, almost smell the fear on someone if you're face-to-face. I can hear it, but it's more subtle, and it's more the emotional. But there's a visceral fear, almost a physical fear, that we can sense from each other. There's a much greater risk of sexual attraction face-to-face. You know, there's all this mammal stuff going on. It's like, oh, God, this whole other level. It's like, please make that go away. You know, and we can't just wish it away. We have to also work with that. We haven't even touched on that. But I think people may be afraid to tune into the body because, you know, they feel like it's going to be this uncontrollable thing. And I don't think that's true. And I think noticing the body's an instrument and it gives you good information and you don't say everything that pops into your mind that, you know, like normal people. So there's a lot of distractions. A lot of distractions. What we wear, you know, worrying about how we're dressed, all that stuff goes away on the phone. I have to agree with you about that.
Yeah, I have no compulsion to add Skype to my phone conversations. It's just fine the way it is.
Mm-hmm. People, I'll do it with someone if they really ask me to, and then I'll say, "Can we turn this off now that you've kind of seen what I look like? Can we actually turn it off?" Or I'll just close my eyes. You know, they can have it on, and there I am with my eyes closed. But mostly, we turn off the visual.
Okay, so you've kind of tuned in three areas of the body, messages that. In the case of the belly and maybe the head are more on-off switches, but in the case of the heart area, provide a variety of emotional feelings to explore and use in the coaching. What else do you want to share with us today about using the body in the coaching conversation?
I'm so used to working through my intuition and listening in these ways. One thing I would encourage people to do is watch people's language, listen to the language and any body markers, any kind of body language, like when we talk about gut, we talk about biting, the tongue, to listen if people are using references to the body, the heart, even just, oh, in my heart feels this, or those kinds of things. I think often reference actual physical feelings and emotions that the client's having.
Okay.
I'm trying to think, what else, what are some good, I don't know, helpful things that you can think of that would help people? I would really like to have people come away from this and try it out.
Well,
and I think the whole notion of not blurting out everything, of creating a feedback loop where you just try it a little bit at a time. Sometimes I will go weeks if I'm working with someone. I'll work over and over and over with them, and I'll wait to see if the same information, I would call it information, if the same feeling is coming to me over and over about somebody, I might wait. I won't sell it to them the first time or the second time. I might wait to see, okay, this is really coming through again, the same thought, the same intuition. I need to try to share this with them. So I am really careful. I don't want people to think I'm advocating not being careful.
And I think that's really good advice for our listeners as they become aware of this, as we get excited about this, a new tool to experiment with it, but cautiously.
So funny, a tool that we were born with, but one that we don't use so much. It's funny. And free, just think, it's like free.
Well,
you
hey, it's...
Tool,
it,
you know, right.
It's like every other electronic tool I've got, you know. It's got more capability than I truly know how to use, so why would the body be any different?
That's pretty good. That's exactly right.
I'll break protocol here. I think our producer had a question he wanted to ask you.
Awesome.
I was just curious, you obviously mentioned that you have a PhD in something, and I'm just curious what it's in. Is it in a related field, or are you an engineering PhD or something? Because you have so much knowledge about the body and about the mind. My first thought was you must be a psychology major or something.
No, not at all. I was 35 when I went back to get my PhD, and I thought I need to have a program where I have a lot of say-so in what I learned. So what I chose was a multidisciplinary kind of PhD in educational foundations and policy studies, in particular the history and the philosophy of education. And what I did my dissertation on was ordinary people's knowledge and sort of versus academic knowledge, and how academic people could take more lively interest in what non-academic people know and why that would be a good idea. And I really wanted to apply it to climate change, which sounds really weird, but I created a climate change organization.
Wow. And have you used any of that in your coaching perspective, or is this a prior life here?
It comes out of social justice organizing, and then it comes out of wanting to get a PhD, but really getting tired of people acting like you don't know anything until you go to grad school. It didn't make any sense to me. And I do use it, actually. I'm constantly... One of my focuses was what African-American community, what it means to when you grew up in the African... And I'm not African-American, I'm white. What does that mean? What do people learn? There's a wonderful book called Black Feminist Thought, and she tries to codify what kinds of knowledge can only be created. And I think knowledge is made, just like it's made in the body. It can be made in the mind, but knowledge is made somewhere. It's not something we go out and find. What kind of knowledge is made? As an African-American woman, what might you know that you couldn't know any other way? When I coach, I'm really proud. I coach people of color. I coach white people. I coach people who are different from me in lots of ways. I'm always interested in what they know from their own experience. And sometimes it is a body experience of walking around black in the world, which is staggering. I mean, right now I'm only reading authors of color. This month marks the first year of my so-called fast from reading white authors. And I'm a very readerly person. And I'm totally diving into James Baldwin, who's been dead for 20 years. But his descriptions of what it's like are so relevant, right? If we, you know, we don't want to go off on politics, but we know some of the things that are starting to come to the fore right now in our country.
Who is the author that wrote Black Like Me and was trying to experience what life was like? I think it was a white person that somehow dyed their skin,
right,
or something and acted as an African American just to feel like what it was feel in that skin. Yeah.
Well, I think our audience is getting a taste of why I wanted Beth on the show here today.
Wow.
She is just a fascinating person.
I'm glad I asked that question here. That opened up a whole new level of conversation and insight into what you do here.
We'll have to add a second hour for that question. Beth, you have certainly done a great job of filling out the title for the show and really laying out some practical, easily applied guidelines for those of us. Oh, I'm going to say coaching, but it really isn't limited to coaching, because in my mind, anytime we listen to another individual, we have an opportunity for a coaching conversation. So I really thank you for what you've done with that.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
This is so fun. I'm glad you think it's practical. I was really concerned about it not making it practical enough.
Oh, no, I think it is, definitely. Look, as we get ready to wrap up, I want to make sure I give you a couple minutes here. Is there something that I talked over, something you didn't get to, that you would like to take a couple minutes to share with the audience?
No, I feel like you've both given me so much space and so much listening. No. Really. I mean, if I had more time, I would probably talk more about cultivating your intuition, because I think intuition is even a deeper knowing or a more ethereal knowing even than what we get from the body. I feel like the body is one whole layer.
Wow.
I really want to emphasize that you don't have to be a so-called psychic, that it's really natural to feel these things. What we do is tune them out, but what's really born to each of us is to know these things that we know and to have permission to know them.
Well, you and I may have to do another show on that.
Tell
me, how does our audience get in touch with you? If they'd like to know more about you and talk with you, how do they contact you?
I think we're the only Raising Clarity anywhere on the web. Really, they can call me on the phone. I'm really very primitive about these things. 304-258-2533. But really, online, Raising Clarity. And the blog is free. I really am very touched at your response to the post. I blog twice a week. And, yeah, I try to create a space for this kind of intelligence, for this kind of openness to each other, giving people permission in this way.
It is wonderful. I would encourage our listeners to go to Beth's site, to start to follow her blog. Not only is she got some great writing, but I love your graphics and your photos that you throw in there. And
what's the site again? Somebody tweeted that you didn't say it slowly enough. Raising Clarity, is that it?
So it would be, and it's partly the way I'm probably sounding on the phone. So www.raisingclarity. If people got Doug's email... It's in all caps. Thank you so much. My branding specialist thanks you also, Doug, for putting it in all caps. And I've been instructed that's what I'm supposed to do. Raising Clarity, because my branding study was that what I really gave people was clarity. In addition to raising money, that was how that started. The people really got clarity from me, and that was a really nice way to put that, I thought.
Yes, and if you go on Beth's website, Raising Clarity Reveals Abundance, and abundance means peace, power, and wealth, and she has some great dialogue explaining what she means by those. Before I let you go, Beth, I just want to share with the audience a couple more tidbits about you. We already mentioned you have a PhD. I love the tag in your website that you were born in 1960, expecting to live to 150, as that's how we're designed, and you live accordingly. And Beth is a gentle and fierce person, practical and competitive, goes into the dream time for budgets, narratives, word choices, and solutions to problems, goes to museums, bathhouses, and tea houses for inspirations in the dream time, loves the elements, water, air, earth, fire, and tea. I'm going to cut it off there, but this is a person that is really in touch with our environment. And Beth, I'm so glad to have made your acquaintance.
Doug, thank you. And thank you, Paul, for making space for me. It's really lovely, this coaching space that you guys are creating. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. And welcome to the Coaching Perspective Radio Show community. Have a great evening, Beth.
Thank you so much. Good night.
Good night. Well, I appreciate that. It was a great show. It wasn't that convenient for Beth. She's in a different time zone, so it's a little later for her, but she was willing to make the accommodation for the show to be on it live. I thought that was more important. If you're listening to our podcast, then thanks for visiting our website, The Coaching Perspective, and while you're there, be sure to check out our archives for other shows with some great guests. And speaking of guests, if you'd like to be on the show, we're always looking for coaches, CEOs, and HR professionals to interview. Just send me an email, doug@thecoachingperspective.com. And if you missed any of the previous shows, you can either go to our website or you can go to our archive site, which is dgefeller.podbeam. Well, this is Doug Gefeller. I hope that you've enjoyed the show today, that the discussion has provided you with new ideas and information that you can put to use immediately to identify and achieve your goals. Have a great evening.
You've been listening to the only show that takes a look at business from a different perspective, The Coaching Perspective, with Master Certified Business Coach, Doug Gefeller.